Joining us to analyze today's headlines is Chenjerai Kumanyika. He is an assistant professor of communication studies at Clemson University. Hi, Chenjerai.
How you doing?
Doing well, thanks for joining us. The national trend to abolish the death penalty continued this week with the state of Nebraska formally ending the practice. State lawmakers voted yesterday to end capital punishment, narrowly overriding Republican Governor Pete Ricketts's veto from the day before. Ricketts responded, saying how, quote, appalled I am that we have lost a critical tool to protect law enforcement and Nebraska families. The law commutes the death sentences of 10 inmates to life in prison. Nebraska is the first state 2 years to end the death penalty, joining 18 other states. The vote was all the more remarkable because Nebraska is dominated by Republican lawmakers compared to its mostly Democratic-dominated counterparts. A poll conducted in April found that there's still majority support for the death penalty among Americans, but that the level of support has been falling steadily. Republicans are far more likely to back the practice compared to Democrats. The U.S. is joined by a number of totalitarian regimes worldwide in continuing to rely on the death penalty as a form of punishment. Chenjerai, how important is this Nebraska vote?
I think this vote is extremely important because it represents the possibility of conservative states to push beyond their ideological frame. You know, as this bill was co-sponsored by Republican Senator Colby Koch. But as Ricketts responds, I mean, this really demonstrates that conservatives and many of the death penalty supporters across the country are still under the deep influence of myths about the death penalty. I mean, in 2010, we had law enforcement officers came together to actually write an op-ed. This included James Abbott, the police chief in West Orange, New Jersey. And he said that, you know, we don't feel the death penalty protects us as police officers. So we have so much information about the death penalty and these myths, and yet they still have purchase. And so in light of that, I think this legislation is really important, and it's a really important victory.
And a section of the USA Patriot Act expires this Sunday. Lawmakers still haven't decided what, if anything, to do about it. Section 215, according to The Hill, has been used by law enforcement almost 200 times per year to collect bank and business records from suspected terrorists and spies, end of quote. But privacy advocates have long denounced the invasive nature of the law into the lives of innocent and ordinary Americans. The USA Freedom Act was intended to address some of the concerns, but activists celebrated when the Senate failed to pass a procedural vote on it recently. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has scheduled a rare Sunday vote on that measure once more, and the House had already passed the bill. The Senate will also consider a bill introduced by Senator Dianne Feinstein, who has been a strong proponent of the government's right to spy on Americans. Feinstein's bill criminalizes whistleblowers and is being likened to the Espionage Act. Meanwhile, the Obama administration, panicking at the idea that it might lose some legal justification for mass surveillance, accused lawmakers of playing, quote, national security Russian roulette with the Patriot Act. Chenjerai, if Section 215 of the USA Patriot Act does expire, how serious a victory would that be?
That would be a major victory, and I think it's amazing that in light of what we now know about these surveillance practices, that so many in the Obama administration are still arguing to preserve this oppressive type of surveillance. The Privacy and Civil Liberties Oversight Board, commenting on these practices, said they have not identified a single instance involving a threat to the U.S. in which bulk collection under Section 215 made a concrete difference in the outcome of a counterterrorism investigation. So I think what's also important is organizations like the Electronic Frontier Foundation has laid out a plan. And so they are really stressing that citizens still have the opportunity to connect with their representatives. And I encourage you to go to the Electronic Frontier Foundation's website and just learn more about the issue and to see their plan for how you can connect.
And finally, Russian President Vladimir Putin has stepped into the scandal over yesterday's arrest of a number of FIFA officials in Switzerland. FIFA, the main governing body on the world's most popular sport, is facing charges of corruption and bribery by the U.S. Department of Justice. The arrested officials are expected to be extradited to the U.S. to face charges. Mr. Putin, whose nation was chosen to host the 2018 World Cup, called the arrests, quote, another blatant attempt by the United States to extend its jurisdiction to other states. The hosting decision was investigated last year and cleared, but Russia refused to turn over the computers in question and has subsequently destroyed them. Invoking the U.S.'s persecution of Edward Snowden and Julian Assange, Putin made the case that FIFA officials were being similarly unfairly targeted. Here in the U.S., the Clinton Foundation has also come under fire for accepting hundreds of thousands of dollars in donations from FIFA and more from the 2022 World Cup host Qatar. The U.S. lost its bid to host that World Cup. Now, Chandra, what do you think the U.S. is going to, why do you think the U.S. is going after FIFA?
Well, Sonali, sometimes people do the right things for the wrong reasons. In this case, Loretta Lynch aims to start, off strong with her Justice Department on a high-profile issue that FIFA is deeply vulnerable on. And so Putin, it's also clear, would like to avoid any kind of repercussions for the ways that he might have been complicit in that. But at the same time, Putin is, I think, right. The questions he raises about corruption, how we think about corruption, and the U.S.'s hypocrisy on this issue are questions that we can't throw out, although his reasons for doing this may not be the best. So I think it's a complex issue, and I think as the more comes about this, we'll see so many people are involved in this in a lot of different ways.
Chandra, thanks as always for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.
Chandra Kumanyika is an assistant professor of communication studies at Clemson University. This is Uprising. We'll be right back.